news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast on the Ordinary Baseball Broadcast.
Something else I'm getting tired of is all this stupid bullshit we have to listen to all the time about children. It's all you hear in this country. Children. Help the children. What about the children? Save the children. You know what I say? F*** the children. They're getting entirely too much attention.
Now here comes your host, Kyle Abaron of the World Series.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 97. Happy New Year. We're in a recession. Ah! We've got all the geeky news you can use, part of thegeekmedia.com, surfing all the sites for the latest on entertainment and tech, and then we blab on and on about it. From the West Coast, this is Kyle Abaron. I am an anime and video game voice actor.
And your co-host from the East Coast, Otherworld Steve. I'm a musician and up-and-coming author.
Going to catch everyone up to speed with the latest in the Watchmen trial. Warner Brothers also considering putting live-action comic book movies on hold. We honor Commissioner Gordon and Catwoman. Rest in peace. Tron 2 gets a new leading man and a title change. We've got Avatar casting news, Disney jumping ship on the next Narnia, video distribution coming to the Wii, Star Wars game is headed to the mobile phone platform, Facebook promotion for a free burger. God, I love this. This is hysterical. iTunes is ditching their copy protection. What does Nine Inch Nails do with 400 gigs of raw, high-def concert footage? Funimation picking up the biggest of all mecha titles. No, not Gundam. And a top five list, courtesy of the awesome website that we love, Cracked.com. The top five reasons why Megatron should have fired Starscream. Plus all of our usual banter that helps culminate in a huge time killer we can all be proud of. Coming up next on the Triple B.
1, 2, 3, 4. Twitter.com/BBBroadcast.
Word. Welcome back to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 97. Of course, this is our first new episode of the new year. It's 2009. I'm really happy I've managed to not write 2008 on any checks, at least yet. How about you?
I do it at work constantly. Everything is very date sensitive at work, and I'm constantly throwing the 08 on there. And yeah, you know, stupid me. It takes me a minute. I'm going to catch it, cross it off.
I'm just glad that my apartment complex has online bill pay. So it's just automatically withdrawn from my bank account. I'm saving stamps. I'm saving checks. I try to do as much as I can with a credit or a debit card or online as possible. I don't even walk around with cash, really. Cash, what is that? It's so passe.
It is. It's amazing the digital age we live in nowadays. 99% of our household bills are our mortgage, gas, electric, phone, cable, blah, blah, blah. All bill pay, automatic online.
And then you know what? You feel like you're caught with your pants down the minute you go to a public event and you're trying to park and the people take cash only. It's like, hey, come on.
Cash? What the hell is that?
Yeah, what is that? They used to use that in the 20th century. Oh, my God.
But even my check is direct deposited, so I live in this total, like, binary financial situation. It's really wild.
Yeah. Well, in case you're new to the podcast, we love discussing this sort of thing. The whole way technology has taken over and become ingrained in our lives and how we sit there and just scratch our head going, how the hell did we live without all this cool stuff? That is what we talk about among the many things here on the Big Ball Broadcast. We discuss video games, movies, cartoons, anime, technology, the weird side of fandom. You know, yeah, once in a while, we'll just tackle a lot of pop culture stuff. We're constantly checking on websites left and right to get all this stuff, and we make it easy for you. You don't have to do all the surfing. We actually do have a Twitter page that is filled with nothing but daily geeky links to all of the stories we discuss and more, so please check out twitter.com/BB Broadcast. I can proudly say that since we have come into the new year, our followers on Twitter have jumped up to 66 followers as of this recording. Yay!
That's very badass, and we appreciate each and every one.
That's right. So if you are a Twitter user, make sure and follow us on there. You don't have to sign up on Twitter to follow us, of course. You can lurk anonymously. But, you know, we're whores that way. We want to know who's listening, who's checking us out. And another way to gauge the listener interest is, of course, the email. The email. So we're going to check our inbox now at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com.
You've got mail.
Keen from Canada says, "Hey, guys, I took advantage of the Boxing Day prices and bought myself a PS3. Are there any amazing PS3 games or Blu-ray movies you just have to recommend? I know The Dark Knight is up there, but I'm looking for something a little less obvious, but still amazing in HD. I'm sorry, but I have to start my recommendation list with The Dark Knight. I'm sorry, but that is like one of the great demo, jaw-dropping Blu-rays there is right there.
I agree wholeheartedly. I went and saw The Dark Knight in the theater, and I was treated to the scratched-up film print and the loud talking and the cell phones and everything that goes on in the theater. So Dark Knight on Blu-ray was my first Blu-ray movie purchase. I was so excited, I actually sent Kyle a text while I was in the store saying, "Wow, first Blu-ray, yay!" Go home and watch it. It's just so jaw-droppingly, amazingly sharp. It's unlike any experience I've ever had before, watching it back on my nice HD plasma. Definitely a worthwhile purchase. I know it's so glaringly obvious that, you know, The Dark Knight is the Blu-ray to pick up, but shit, you gotta pick it up. It's a must-buy. It's not a rent, it's not a borrow, it's not a download. It's a buy.
That's right, and if you're one of the three or four people who haven't seen The Dark Knight, Warner Brothers is re-releasing it in IMAX and in theaters to help garner some Oscar buzz coming on the 23rd, I believe, just a week or so away from now. So that's a great chance. If you haven't seen it on the big screen, highly recommend you do that. But once you do, march right to your nearest retail store and buy the Blu-ray, you know, assuming you have a Blu-ray player or a PS3.
And especially now after the holidays, most retailers have it for like $20. So you really can't go wrong.
No, absolutely not. Another one that I highly recommend is probably on the obvious list is Iron Man. Let's see, Serenity, because I'm just a hardcore Joss Whedon nut. If you're into craptastic B-movie cheese, I heartily recommend Death Race. Jason Statham. Yeah. It's absolutely gorgeous on Blu-ray. It is totally craptastic. If you like a little old school carnage with vehicles and weaponry, you could go back to The Road Warrior, back when Mel Gibson was normal. The transfer on that Blu-ray is just amazing. It looks like it was shot yesterday. And I heartily recommend Transformers on Blu-ray. It's probably one of the best looking things I have in my collection, along with Dark Knight. Anything from Pixar. Actually, anything that's digitally animated. I have Kung Fu Panda. It looks amazing. The Pixar stuff. Nightmare Before Christmas. Highly recommended. Even though that's just stop motion, the remastered print is just pristine.
Now, of course, game-wise, it's incredibly convoluted. If you have a 360... Sorry, getting a phone call. If you have a 360, chances are, you know, that's where all your online game playing is taking place because the Xbox Live experience is so ingrained in pop culture. So for the PS3, the only thing I can really recommend going out and picking up is something that's a PS3 exclusive. I have a couple PS3 games. I really don't pop them in all that often. Not because I don't like them. It's just, you know, for the most part, I'm spending time on the 360. I bought my PS3 in full anticipation of God of War 3, which hopefully should be coming out before the end of this year. So I'm enjoying Blu-ray right now, and I'll really get into the gaming aspect once God of War 3 launches.
Yeah, if you want to go into the buzz, now I don't have these games, but people rave about Metal Gear Solid 4 and Little Big Planet. Now, this has not turned into huge sales for the PS3. In fact, over the holidays, the big winner was definitely Nintendo with the Wii and, of course, Xbox, because, you know, you've got that installed fan base all ready to go with online play. And PlayStation, you know, as great a console as they have, as great a gadget and a toy and Blu-ray player that it is, it's just not catching on as a gaming console.
You know, it really blew my mind to see how dismally Sony performed this past holiday season, because the HD format's dead. You know, the HD race is over. Blu-ray's the very clear victor. I really thought people would, you know, at least get their feet wet with Blu-ray this holiday season and, you know, pick up definitely the best Blu-ray player on the market, the PS3.
Yeah, that's the whole reason I got a PS3 in the first place. It just turned out that the reviews glowingly all across the net are claiming and hailing the PS3 as the best Blu-ray player. Now, a lot of people are still on a budget. Obviously, the economy sucks right now. People don't want to pay $300 or $400 for a Blu-ray player, even if it is a gaming console as well. It's like they're looking for that magic $200 or less price point. And yeah, there are some, you know, lesser brands out there, but if you want the best bang for your buck, I'd say save your money and get a PS3.
And I really couldn't have said it more eloquently than that.
Yahoo! Yes. So, gaming recommendations for Keen in Canada. I don't know. Try Little Big Planet. Try God of War 3, which will hopefully, again, like you said, Steve, will debut later on this year. I picked up Devil May Cry 4, and I know that's on the Xbox, but I got it on the PS3 because it does install to the hard drive and saves on the load times. If that's a big deal to you as a gamer, then you can think about that. But however, games that are available on both consoles in general are reviewed a little bit less favorably on the PS3. They say there's glitches with the graphics and gameplay. They're constantly having to issue firmware patches and stuff. Not the same can be said for Xbox. So hopefully, Keen, you have an Xbox and just fire up the Blu-ray on your PS3 for now anyway. And remember, you can send your thoughts to the Big Bald Broadcast. We want to hear what you have to say, whether it's a comment, question, or a story suggestion. Just include your link to your source. And if you have a microphone, we'd love to hear your audio comments. Send whatever it is to thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. Now let's hit the quick hits. Oh, yeah, this is the stuff that, you know, it's made the headlines, but maybe we don't have so much to say about it necessarily. So we're just going to go back and forth here. Let me start with a pretty major announcement here. I can't wait till June 16th, 2 days after my birthday. This is a big day. Ghostbusters on Blu-ray and Ghostbusters the video game. Yes!
Laptops have been out shipping desktops in the US for years upon years. It wasn't until now that such a scenario was true worldwide. According to iSupply, global network computer shipments exceeded those of desktops for the first time ever in quarter three of this year. More specifically, notebook PC shipments surged from around 40% to 38.6 million units, while desktop shipments slipped 1.3% to 38.5 million.
And then you know what's really selling like hotcakes now? Those netbooks, those things that are just built like crap. They're sub $500, sub $300. You walk into Target, pay $300 for this tiny little laptop. Looks like a portable DVD player. Probably doesn't hold up very well, but if you just want to surf the net and get online, I guess a netbook's the way to go.
As long as you have no intentions on downloading anything.
Then it'll totally explode right in front of your face.
Yes!
Woohoo! Yeah, all right. Well, some more news and very sad news, unfortunately. Rest in peace, Commissioner Gordon and Catwoman. Let me explain. Pat Hingle, a veteran actor whose career included a recurring role as Commissioner James Gordon in the original Tim Burton Batman and Batman Returns, and then the total crap fest Joel Schumacher's Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, has unfortunately passed away from blood cancer. He was 84. Likewise, Eartha Kitt, who played one of the three actresses as Catwoman in the 1960s TV series, passed away on Christmas Day at age 81 of colon cancer. Man, that sucks! Seriously. That's bad. It's like, Merry Christmas, you're dead.
Yep, aww. Exactly.
Dude.
In other bad news, after an open casting call in Texas, M. Night Shyamalan discovered karate star Noah Ringer and offered him the part of Airbender's 12-year-old hero Aang, an avatar with superpowers who must stop the Fire Nation from destroying the world. Twilight's Jackson Rathbone has been asked to play Aang's pal Sokka, while Nicole Peltz from Deck the Halls will star as his sister Katara. Genial singer Jesse McCartney, meanwhile, is negotiating to play against type in the role of the Fire Nation's evil prince Zuko.
Wow, talk about against type. Jesse McCartney, the pop singer whose songs I used to play. I actually interviewed him back in my Radio Disney days. Nice guy, but right for this part?
I couldn't say because I have no idea who that dude is.
Well, remember, he's playing against type. Maybe he'll be amazing. But then again, it's M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong. So, yeah. Even more depressing news. Well, not really depressing, but if you have an original Xbox, you may want to hurry the hell up and get to a GameStop because they will apparently no longer accept trade-ins after February 9th for first-generation Xbox games, accessories, or consoles. So remember, your days are numbered.
Look for a number of upcoming big movie blockbusters to have ads debuting for this year's Super Bowl. Confirmed for this year's roster are high-profile titles like Paramount's Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen, Star Trek, and G.I. Joe, along with Sony's Angels and Demons, DreamWorks Animation's Monsters vs. Aliens, and Universal's Land of the Lost. Disney is also planning to use the game to raise the profile for Pixar's next tune, Up, while a Wolverine spot is likely from Fox. The Super Bowl airs on February 1st, 2009 on NBC.
I couldn't give two shits about who's playing. I just want to watch the commercials.
That's the wonderful thing about Super Bowl commercials is, you know, like, by that night and even the following morning, all the commercials are plastered all over the internet, so you don't even need to watch the Super Bowl. You can check out all the commercials in HD just a little while later.
That's right. That's a good point. I'll remember that. So Disney has selected actor Garrett Hedlund. He was featured in Troy and the movie Four Brothers. He will be the new face of their lead character in the upcoming sequel to the 80s classic Tron, which has also now been retitled to simply Tron. Even though it is a sequel, it's kind of a reimagining, I don't know, that sort of thing. $150 million effects-intensive budget. Right now, there's nothing official to link to, unfortunately, but if you do a little searching on YouTube, you can see someone's little camcorder footage of a teaser trailer from Comic-Con that definitely whetted the appetite of many a fanboy.
THQ just dropped a sweet bomb on us with a teaser announcement of a brand new Star Wars Battlefront game for the mobile platform. The title suggests something of a crossbreed between Battlefront first-person shooter action and possibly the strategic fighting multiplayer of the recent Clone Wars game, also from THQ Wireless. The teaser picture scenes show Count Dooku, the Emperor, and Yoda all brandishing their lightsabers, with Princess Leia alongside, suggesting a journey through all six episodes, with a degree of online action built into the game.
Well, THQ definitely has a hit on their hands with A Force Unleashed, and we'll see how they fare, you know? I was pretty happy with Force Unleashed. A little repetitive, but yeah, I thought it was a fun game.
I was actually, like, really disappointed with it because it became very repetitive, very monotonous, very quickly.
Well, yeah, but it's there are far worse Star Wars games.
Oh, of course. What made it really slick, though, was if you elected to type in any cheat codes, you lost the ability to save your gameplay. So, little FU for people who cheat.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes. All right. Well, this one I am really, really excited for, making its U.S. broadcast debut finally after already airing in Canada and certain other nations around the world, the animated Wolverine and the X-Men, coming to Nicktoons on January 23rd. I'm pretty psyched about this one.
As am I. I need to hear me some Wolverines.
That's right. Considering our good buddy Steve Bloom is Wolverine and some other anime voice actors are also featured in the cast. I think Liam O'Brien can be heard as Nightcrawler. And I've auditioned like for a dozen characters easily for that first season, but didn't get anything, unfortunately. However, they did. We just announced this like either the last episode or the one before it, that a second season has already been greenlit. So keep your fingers crossed. You'll hear me on the second season, damn it.
I did see the pilot episode, and so far it looks pretty.
Yeah, it looks pretty, and I don't know how, if people are really saying, you know, oh, it's not as good as Evolution, or if you kind of rolled your eyes at Evolution and going, no, I hope they get it right this time. The fan base is kind of split on that one.
I kind of dug the 90s series. That's kind of a halfway decent X-Men series out there.
And that's one I've never seen. I hope I do. I wasn't going to pick this up, but because Deadpool's in it, he's not the main character, but he is in Hulk Versus. It's this direct-to-video and Blu-ray. It's got Hulk versus Thor and Hulk versus Wolverine. And for some reason, Deadpool's in there, too. So I'm looking forward to that.
I saw some leaked clips on Ain't It Cool News. And wow, the fight between Hulk and Wolverine, just from what they gleamed in the teaser clips, very, very badass. If you're out for like balls on, just action, fight scenes, explosions, definitely a pickup.
Woohoo! And that's either coming out very, very soon, if not already. I don't have the release date on hand, but the hour is nigh for the release of that Marvel property.
Coming to a torrent site near you.
You bad man.
Blu-ray, I'll pick it up.
Yeah, there you go. Woohoo! Let's get to the big, big, big meat of this particular episode. This is a big story lately over the holidays and everything. The big lawsuit over the film Watchmen. Fox is yelling very loudly that, hey, we have the rights to this to distribute it. And meanwhile, Warner Brothers has already spent the money and time. It's already filmed. It's in the can. It's practically done at this point, set for a March release date. And this little snag, Fox throwing a little wrench there, trying to say that, hey, this is our thing. And guess what? A judge actually ruled in their favor, saying, yes, there is sufficient evidence that Fox does retain the distribution rights. Now, as of this podcast, Fox and Warner Brothers have decided to kind of call a truce, and their legal teams are working together to try to hash this out, because it's a bloody mess right now. No one wants to see the movie delayed, which is what Fox originally wanted. They said, you know, until we get our fair share, we're going to petition the judge to stop the release of the film, and nobody wants that. But hopefully... maybe even by the time you guys hear this podcast, it will have been hashed out, and hopefully Watchmen will still be on track for its March release.
Yeah, the updates were coming in fast and furious yesterday about how they are having some closed-door talks right now, and the word out there, I mean, even on Dig, is, you know, it kind of looks like it's still going to come out on time. I've said it before, I'll say it again, this is a matter that's all coming down to money. Fox is just trying to get a huge percentage for the proceeds from the film, and, from the way things sound, I'm hoping that, you know, they'll clear it out, and within the next week or so, we should know if it's going to come out on time. And part of me feels bad for Warner Brothers, knowing they're going to take such a hit to the purse with this. But at the same time, I mean, it's like, come on, if you had any questions whatsoever about the rights, don't you think we should have cleared this up before you spent your $200 million making the film?
And I have to throw this in here, that there's an open letter from one of the producers of Watchmen named Lloyd Levin, who gave his perspective that originally, many, many years ago, Fox did have an option for it, and they turned it down. They didn't like the script at all. They didn't like the idea. So therefore, Lloyd and also producer Lawrence Gordon took their script over to Warner, who were a little skeptical, but they decided they were at least interested. Now, they did the typical Hollywood thing and said, well, let's change this and change that and all that. But then, you know, you had Zack Snyder and other people come on board saying, you know, as close and true to the original material and faithful as possible, as evidenced by the gorgeous trailers that are out there. I mean, they're like frame for frame, pretty much like panel for panel.
I just wonder how hard Alan Moore is laughing, given all these current events.
Yeah, because historically he has given the middle finger to Hollywood. He wants nothing to do with any of his film adaptations. Now, I guess that's a good thing as far as League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but V for Vendetta, very, very good. Watchmen, of course, looks fantastic. Let's see what else. Well, there was Swamp Thing in the early 80s.
Which is badass. I grew up with that film. I saw it 1,000 times on HBO or Cinemax or whatever. Yeah, don't go talking smack on the Swamp Thing.
It's a camp classic for sure. Adrienne Barbeau, yes, who can be heard lately. She voiced the Catwoman on the animated Batman series, and she actually has the same agent as I do. We actually had a conversation about Priuses in the lobby of my agency last year. I was shocked. I was just like, wow. She's still looking good, too.
Just a little more SAG to the movies.
Indeed. But what I was going to say about Lloyd Levin's letter about, you know, the thing, the point about, you know, Fox saying, we don't want this, this is crap, and then Warner taking it on, and then a little ironic that a studio that said no the first time is certainly saying, hey, oh, that's our film. He's like, is that just a total example of Hollywood greed at its worst?
Well, I mean, ever since the first little mini feature was released online from Warner Brothers, I think all the fanboys kind of gave it the thumbs up, even with the change to the end of the movie. For the most part, it's still a resounding hell yes from the fan base. And Fox Sports. I said, wait a minute. How can we cash in on this? It looks like people are actually going to go out and check this out theatrically.
Now, I do think that something that could be thrown as a peace offering for Warner Brothers is the rights to the original 1966 Batman TV series. If you go back to that, you know, that's actually a Fox property. But because Warner holds the Batman license, Fox can't release that TV series on DVD, which is one of the most requested TV series on DVD of all time.
Something tells me it wouldn't be a fair trade. I think Fox still wants a pretty big percentage of the box for Watchmen theatrically and on Blu-ray and DVD.
Well, of course they do. But they do stand to make a lot of money with Wolverine and I guess their X-Men 90210 or whatever the hell they're doing. Oh, ouch. No class X-Men. Oh, boy.
Well, let's talk about one film that will possibly never see the light of day, and that is The Chronicles of Narnia, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. While declining to elaborate, Disney and Walden Media confirmed last Tuesday that, for budgetary and logistical reasons, the Burbank-based studio is not exercising its option to co-produce or co-finance the next Narnia film with Walden. The third entry in the series, based on the classic books by C.S. Lewis, was in pre-production and set for a spring shoot and a planned May 2010 release. The development puts the participation of the talent attached in doubt. Walden has a strong relationship with the Lewis estate and will shop Treader in hopes of finding a new partner. The most likely candidate, as ironic as it sounds, is Fox, which markets and distributes Walden Fair under the Fox-Walden banner. Any partnership on a Narnia movie will require a substantial investment. Prince Caspian, which filmed in the Czech Republic, Mexico, and New Zealand, cost $200 million, and the first film, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, was shot mostly in New Zealand for $180 million.
You know, the staggering thing to me is people film in countries like that because it supposedly saves money. How expensive would that movie be if they just shot it in Burbank? You know, like, oh, this was a $600 million movie.
It's tough because, you know, if you look at the call sheets, I'm sure the shooting for the film was maybe 3 months tops and probably a year to a year and a half in post-production because all these films nowadays are so CG-laden. So I'm sure that's what actually eats up a bulk of the cost. And, you know, God knows when the talent gets paid. You got Qui-Gon Jinn voicing the lion in the first one, and I'm sure he demanded a fair share to do that.
That's true. And you had even Weta Workshop, which did all the Lord of the Rings stuff in New Zealand, but yet the effects quality seemed to be shaved down a bit on The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, at least.
It was. And there are some elements that really pull you out of that fantasy when you're watching the film because you go, oh, wait a minute, that's some just craptacular CG. I personally wasn't too impressed with the first one, and as a result, did not go to see Prince Caspian, and even if this third one was made, I can't say that it gets me, you know, all tingly in the nether regions.
Not exactly. I've long heard from a lot of people over the years that Prince Caspian is the dullest of the novels, and then again, the purist were mad that some changes were made in the film version. So it's like the studio can't win.
Well, you know, that's Hollywood, and if you haven't caught on by now, then you really missed the boat. Hollywood is going to change things. It doesn't matter if it's a novel adaptation or a comic book adaptation or even an anime adaptation. Adaptation meaning they're going to take some liberties, so going to take what Hollywood throws at you with a grain of salt.
Now, I wonder how much changes are going to happen with the last two Harry Potter movies, considering the last book is what being split into two movies.
You know, it's really funny because even J.K. Rowling is saying it's not a matter of the studio doing it to make money. There's just so much content in the book. The last book is actually the longest book, and her justification is the only way we can bring this to the big screen is to split it into two films. And actually, as we discussed a couple shows back, it may not be the last Harry Potter entry, or should I say the last J.K. Rowling entry, because there's that story about the tale of Beetle the Bard becoming a feature film, although a lot of Potter fans are trying to wrap their heads around just how they're going to bring five short stories to the big screen since they don't interconnect. So that'll be interesting.
An experiment nonetheless that I'm sure Warner Brothers is like, I don't care, let's just do it.
At a bank, when you see that cash cow going out to pasture, it's like, shit, what are we going to do? If it has anything even loosely related to the Harry Potter franchise, we're going to make a big budget film about it.
Yeah, so it's interesting with the whole Chronicles of Narnia. Where will it end up? Yeah, it made a little money, but obviously not enough to stay afloat. My interest level is kind of with you, Steve. You know, I wasn't really all that impressed with the first one. I had no interest in seeing the second one. The third one, again, people classically say The Voyage of the Dawn Treader is the best of the series, but if I'm already not hooked, it's pretty a hard sell for me, and I know it's going to be a hard sell for any other studio to want to cough up a considerable amount of cash to invest in a franchise that already has not proven itself.
Exactly, and particularly when you mentioned Fox, you know, for being in the running for picking it up. If Disney has no interest in it and Fox does in fact pick it up, you have the problem first and foremost with bringing the talent back. There's no guarantees that you're going to have that consistency by bringing those same characters back. And I wonder overall what that would mean for the budget. You know, it kind of sounds B-movie-ish compared to what Disney was giving it.
That's true. And then again, we also have to see what happens with the Watchmen outcome. You know, how lined are the pockets of Fox after that whole debacle?
I guess that's true. If they can pull in, you know, $200-300 million and they could parlay that into this film, who knows? It could be even better than what Disney could have brought to the big screen.
One will certainly never argue with wanting to make something better. All right, well, speaking of big cash cows and such, we all know Iron Man 2 is going to be a huge hit no matter who you stick in the movie, but it is reported nonetheless, and this is interesting, Variety and The Hollywood Reporter are tapping Mickey Rourke and Sam Rockwell. We got Mickey Rourke, who is currently in the critically acclaimed Wrestler, and Sam Rockwell in Frost Nixon. They're tapped as villains for Iron Man 2. Rockwell is tapped to play Justin Hammer, a multi-billionaire businessman and rival of industrialist Tony Stark. Meanwhile, Rourke may be set to play a tattooed Russian heavy named Ivan, who becomes a man with deadly technologically enhanced coils. He would play the Crimson Dynamo. Now, a third role apparently is still open and not cast, or at least no one has been even selected to even read for the part yet, is one of Tony Stark's assistants, Natasha. Production is set for spring. Paramount is looking to release Iron Man 2 on May 7th of 2010.
Of course, the announcement of bringing some big-name talent to the movie may generate some interest. I, for one, I don't care. And I'm not saying that in a negative way or to be facetious. I mean that dead seriously, because after seeing the first one theatrically, I'm so curious to see how they're going to follow it up that. At this point, I wouldn't even care if they cast, you know, Paul Rubens, a.k.a. Pee-wee Herman, as one of the villains. I'm really, really curious. It's the same thing like if Chris Nolan's going to go ahead and make a third Batman film. I'm so curious to see how the plot's going to pan out that it's not even about the casting right now. My confidence is already there, and, you know, I'll probably go and get in line tomorrow to get ready to see that film.
And there probably are people that have already beat you to the punch. But yeah, I totally agree. I would have lined up to see Dark Knight in IMAX no matter who was playing the Joker, no matter who was playing Batman, because I was just that excited to see the film. And same can be said for Iron Man 2, because the first one just blew me away. You know, I went in as a harsh critic saying, no way is Robert Downey Jr. going to take this role and make it interesting. And you know what? He did exactly that. And I cannot see anyone else in that role.
The choice of Robert Downey Jr. for Iron Man was just brilliant, because he didn't have to do any method acting or anything. He just drew from his own life experience. And
that's a very good point. And Jon Favreau may be tapping into, you know, these other very established actors. And that's a good thing, because now I know you're saying it doesn't matter who they cast. But to me, OK, the back of my mind, yeah, it kind of does. We want to bring some experience to the gate for this, because you got Robert Downey Jr., veteran actor, Jeff Bridges, veteran actor. You know, Don Cheadle is taking over the Terrence Howard role, veteran actor. We've got Mickey Rourke. You know, he started in the 80s. Sam Rockwell, a younger talent, but again, critically acclaimed performances. It's good that Jon Favreau is bringing this sort of level of talent to the table, so that makes it almost a moot point. You don't have to worry about the characterization.
Well, my argument lies with anybody who has seen Batman and Robin. Because, you know, here's a film that brought top-notch, big-name talent to the film, and it's one of the worst feature films ever made. So I don't think it necessarily matters who you cast. I think it matters whether or not they're able to bring that element of the character to the screen. When you're watching it, you have a just truly believable character. So as long as the directors are keeping that aspect in mind, I'm excited.
Well, yeah, and actors are just one cog in the wheel. I mean, there's many elements that, of course, make it, and it all goes down to, one could argue, you just need a great story. You know, and it's not about, oh, it's Bruce Willis. No, 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 it's about a character you care about or whatever, for example.
The audience needs that ownership. The audience needs to feel when the characters are in danger and feel all those emotional highs and lows. And again, as long as you can bring that to the screen, you struck gold.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about big superhero films, you know, both Iron Man and The Dark Knight made a shit ton of money in 2008. But, you know, what was the difference between them? Well, one of the big differences is that Marvel had a plan, and Warner Brothers / DC didn't. And while Marvel's assembling an Avengers onslaught of films that will likely have them rolling in money through 2015, DC has nothing but vague ideas and heads up their asses. So, perhaps it's a good idea that Warner has put all their live-action DC films on hold until they figure out what the hell they're doing. And this is all according to director and screenwriter David S. Goyer via IESB. And this means films like the long-rumored Green Lantern, Wonder Woman, Supermax, and the next Superman flick. Whether Warner Brothers' pause is a good thing or a bad thing depends on whether you think they have the ability to make a plan at all. Marvel set up its own studio, owns the characters, and can call the shots, thus adding Robert Downey Jr. to the Hulk movie. At DC, they have to deal with a bunch of idiot executives who know nothing about the characters, the properties, or what the fans and culture have to say. And this is, of course, how we ended up with Superman, Super Deadbeat Dad.
That's a good point. Now, I don't think Superman Returns was a total loss. I actually enjoyed it, but I think that article sums it up very nicely. Yeah, Marvel does have a plan. They are in control, and DC doesn't know what the hell they're doing. We announced a few shows back that the execs at Warner Brothers are like, okay, The Dark Knight, obviously the top film gross of 2008. We're going to make all our other superhero movies just the same. It's like, wait a minute. All these other properties, all these other characters, they don't all call for the same dark, brooding, psycho, dark sort of thing going on here. That would be like a big misfire.
2008 is certainly going to go down in history for really setting the bar for superhero films. Prior to 2008, it was very hit or miss, particularly with the Spider-Man franchise, where it started out really strong, the second one was, mediocre, and the third one was just plain ass. You had the first relaunched Batman movie, Batman Begins, from Christopher Nolan. It was okay. I really enjoyed it, and, you know, I know a lot of people that did, but it wasn't like a blockbuster. When The Dark Knight came out, it really changed the way the superhero films are going to be made from now for the next 20 years. And the same with Iron Man. You had two really incredible, powerful films that came out. Like the article stated, Marvel had a plan. Marvel introduced Iron Man with the whole plan of moving forward to the big Avengers culmination, the two-movie Avengers culmination. DC just kept, you know, throwing it on the wall and tried to see what would stick. I don't think they anticipated The Dark Knight being such a phenomenal hit. And I can understand them sitting in the boardroom scratching their heads going, shit, where do we go from here?
The only wisdom I see that I've heard coming out from the Warner camp is they're letting Christopher Nolan take his time. They're going to let him, they let him obviously do what he wanted with the story with Batman Begins and then The Dark Knight. And luckily, they're not forcing their hand going, hey, we're just going to make the third, we're just going to strike while the iron's hot and do that. So luckily, they're letting him, give him some breathing room, and hopefully the quality won't suffer and we won't get a dismal third entry, as is usually the case in any film series.
And unfortunately, you know, therein lies the issue, because they can't rush Christopher Nolan to make the third installment of the Batman relaunch. It has to be up to the caliber of The Dark Knight. So what do they do in the meantime? They had a few things on the slate, but I mean, if it's not going to live up to Dark Knight caliber or Iron Man caliber, what do you do? So, yeah, it might be a little while before we see a DC film coming to the big screen, but here's hoping that wait is well worth it.
Yeah, I think that hopefully Warner will take the time to set back and think things over and hopefully have some consultants who are tied to the industry and know what the hell they're talking about, so that we don't end up with another dreaded misfire. Now, personally, I never read Green Lantern. I couldn't really get excited about that property or a Supermax. I've never even heard of that. Superman, I'd be interested to see where they take in a direction. And Justice League, of course, I'd be interested in seeing. But I'm in no rush for all that.
And again, that's just pretty wild, too, is that the flagship characters from both publishers, with Spider-Man being the flagship for Marvel and Superman being the flagship for DC, those are the properties that really underperformed theatrically. And you had Batman, who is considered like second tier to Superman, that just really blew the lid off everything, and Iron Man, who is probably fifth or sixth tier as far as Marvel's concerned. So Yeah, maybe bringing some of these lower echelon characters to the big screen might be a good thing. I know a lot of DC fans are just dying for a Lobo film. I mean, that would probably have to be rated X because of the over-the-top violence, but it would sell. I think it would really be a blockbuster.
Dude, I'd so be there. Lobo's awesome. If they just filmed the Lobo Christmas special. Where do you go from there? Okay. Let's go into the realm of video games. Xbox has already led the track with their film and video distribution of high-def content, no less, and even streaming Netflix. PlayStation has also launched their video content. You're able to download movies, some in high-def and everything. Pretty cool. Not as on fire as Xbox, but now it looks like Nintendo's interested in getting into the business of video distribution.
Starting early this year, Nintendo will be joining the ranks of its fellow console makers in offering a video distribution service through the Wii. According to Nikkei Business Daily, the House of Mario will team up with Dentsu Inc. to offer cartoons and other programs created specifically for the service. And since they're using the phrase new revenue stream, we doubt it's going to be offered for free. Video files shouldn't get too excited, though, because given the console's 512 megabyte memory limit and 480p max resolution, it's going to be kind of YouTube-ish. And the service will launch in Japan first and head overseas later.
Well, as given the huge holiday sales for the Wii, obviously there is no shortage of people who want that console, first of all. Second of all, we are a nation that has embraced YouTube to be one of the highest hit sites ever, and the quality is just even their high def stuff, you know, which looks nice. It is a step above the usual YouTube quality, but you know, we're in a nation that accepts highly pixelated compressed video as our main source of entertainment online, as well as compressed audio with the iTunes store and the whole MP3 phenomenon. So, you know, maybe all the high def freaks will have to just let it go by the wayside and accept that Wii is not a system for that. It's just for something to get you the content and have fun with it.
Exactly. And I have to echo what you said. I understand Nintendo's logic in this. I mean, you look at the installed user base for the Wii, it's amazing. The console's been out something like, you know, 29 years now, and you still can't walk into a big box retailer during the holiday season and find them on the shelves. It's insane. A couple days before Christmas, very last minute, I wanted to see if I could find a Wii Fit for Becca for Christmas, and it was laughable. I went to Toys R Us, I went to Walmart, I went to Best Buy, and I got laughed at every store. They're like, are you nuts? It's Christmas time. You're not going to find any Nintendo stuff on the shelves, so it blows my mind. I mean, they outsold the 360 and the PS3 like 4-1 this past holiday season. It's ridiculous. They sold over 2 million units on Black Friday alone.
Yeah, I walked into Best Buy in December on a day that they happened to have a huge stack of Wiis. I had never seen it. I was so shocked. I took a picture with my iPhone and posted it on my Twitter page. I said, this is rare. I'm never going to see this again. And I'm really, really blown away that Wii Fit is doing so well.
It's amazing because prior to its launch, we ripped on it on the podcast saying, you know, America is pretty much known for being kind of fat and lazy, and nobody wants to hop on top of a board and be reminded that they're fat and lazy. But it's phenomenal. The things that we would assume wouldn't work out in this country is just selling like hotcakes.
Yeah, you know, the Raving Rabbit sequel where you had to, you know, play a game with your butt, that whole ad campaign.
And it's amazing that Wii Sports, you know, the bundled disc that comes with the console, is still like one of the greatest games out there. It's incredible. If you don't mind throwing your shoulder out, potentially blowing up your nice HD TV.
I have to say that I recently saw, I forget where this was posted, but it was video that someone had set up. The guy was playing Wii Sports or something. And then he flings the Wiimote. He didn't have the strap on. The strap on. Oh, my. So the Wiimote hits his huge LCD screen. You see the crack, the big spider web across the screen. And he just collapses in terror.
I saw that. I saw that same video with him. And he's touching the screen like, what just happened? And
it's like, can we go back in time, please?
You certainly can't fault Nintendo for that. When Nintendo launched the Wii and there were some concerns about the strap, they were very proactive. They sent everybody brand new straps. Becky and I received new straps for our Wiimotes with the quickness, and it was all, you know, like I said, free from Nintendo. There's all kind of warnings on the booklets included with the games on the screen before you start playing the game, so you can't fault Nintendo for being a douche.
No, but it is pretty eye-opening, the level and frequency of Wii-related injuries.
That's pretty weird, too. Like, a lot of that repetitive stress syndrome or whatever, where you can get hurt. I've played Wii Sports for a few hours, bowling and tennis or whatever, and, man, you feel it the next day. I don't know if it's saying anything about my current state of physical fitness or anything, but yeah, you can certainly feel that burn the following day.
Oh, yes, indeed. Let's talk tech.
Oh, I get it. Make the robot do all the work.
iTunes ditches copy protection, finally. Also known as DRM, or Digital Rights Management. A very out-of-left-field announcement, I gotta say, which recently happened at the Macworld Expo. Apple announced that some 8 million songs from all the major labels will indeed be DRM-free, with a full 10 million planned by the end of the quarter. As if that wasn't enough, it's also announced a new pricing structure for tracks, including a new 69-cent tier and a $1.29 one, which music companies will apparently be able to use at their own discretion. iPhone 3G owners will be happy to learn they can now download songs through iTunes over the 3G network and not just Wi-Fi anymore. Now there's a big but, a big hairy but, because there's always one here. iTunes apparently, I think, is charging for you to upgrade to the copy protection free versions. Have you read this, Steve? Have you heard anything about this?
I guess if you were to buy a new song now, it would be DRM-free, again, with the new price model. If you want to remove the DRM from any of the songs that you have existing in your iTunes library, it's going to cost you 3 cents per track. Don't know how I really feel about that, but I guess with them offering to actually remove the DRM, it's got to be a good thing.
Yeah, and obviously the decision is just public consumer pressure. You've got Amazon, you've got other download stores that don't have the copy protection on there, and consumers are just quite literally tired of being called criminals, pretty much. It's like, hey, we don't trust you, even though you're buying from us. Thanks.
I think 99% of what kind of backed him into the corner was exactly what you just said. It was Amazon. Amazon's working with the big four labels, and they're offering their MP3s DRM-free, and that service really catapulted. It, not quite to iTunes status, but they're doing quite well. And, you know, when you see your competitor faring very well because of what the public demands, you kind of have no choice but to give the public what it wants.
That's right. And also good news that Apple kind of rescinded the chance to just charge more in general. They have remained at 99 cents per download from now on for individual songs. Now, they had a section on iTunes called iTunes Plus, which is where you could purchase DRM-free versions, but it had a very limited selection of music. Now, I'm assuming that from now on, iTunes Plus is just everything on iTunes.
I mean, the labels don't have much of a choice anymore. CD sales are next to non-existent. The music brick-and-mortar stores are also close to non-existent. So, again, you kind of have to deal with what the customer wants, and it's about time. It was a long time coming. A lot of people are holding their breath waiting for this to happen. I still don't know how I feel about the new pricing tier. I like the 69-cent model, but what's the other one, $1.29? I really don't understand why you would charge somebody, you know, 30 cents more for a track. I'm a little confused about that.
I don't know if it's maybe uncompressed. Is it higher quality, maybe? I don't know. Even then, it's just kind of like a, really? You're going to ding us that much more for that?
And then it harkens back to something we talked about a couple shows back with the entertainment tax proposed in New York and also currently in 17 states in the country. Okay, now you just jacked up to $1.29, and if you live in a state with an entertainment tax and they're going to jack something on top of that, I guess I get a little nervous because it almost seems like you're encouraging piracy at that point.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, of course, I welcome a lower price point. I'm kind of used to 99 cents now, as much downloading of apps as I do on the iPhone. But 69 cents, I don't know if that would be aimed more towards indie label stuff, or is that something that maybe the labels can set the price point for?
Maybe older catalog items, and then the newer catalog items will be the more expensive ones. I don't know. On a side note, one thing I'm really excited about is Android's going to be going ahead and releasing a huge firmware update, an OTA, over-the-air update, called Cupcake. And it's actually going to bring some of the iTunes functionality to the G1, so I might have to hop on board with that.
Oh, hell yeah, man. It's like crack. once you start buying these apps or buying these songs or buying these movies even or TV shows.
Well, that's the thing. Later this month, the Android App Store is going out of beta, which means there's going to be pay-for apps available. So application development has crawled to a virtual halt because all the developers are waiting to cash in on it. And after the success of what's going on with the iPhone, I certainly can't blame them. But for an Android phone owner, it's kind of a depressing time right now to not have the latest and greatest coming at me fast and furious.
But, oh, it will. It will. It comes at a price, but hopefully it'll be worth it.
Read an article on Dig a couple days ago about a guy who hacked one of the iPhone apps. He made it free for anybody who wanted to download it. The developer contacted the hacker and asked him why he hacked the app. And I actually respect the hacker's answer, and his response was, I did it because the iTunes Store, and Apple in general, don't allow you to try any of these apps out. Either you pay for it and own it, and kind of go into it blindly, or by some of the sparse reviews out there, or you just overlook it because you don't know what it is. And I think it made a really good point for both Apple and hopefully for Android to allow users to be able to try out some of these applications before we go ahead and piss away our 99 cents to $5.99 for them. So I actually applaud that hacker for doing that.
That is a good point, but there are plenty of games, for example, game apps and other things, task manager apps, that do have what they call light versions, L-I-T-E, which are free, that do allow you to try a few things out. And then obviously there's more full functionality and more features in the paid version. Yeah, it's definitely a model that should be followed. You know, 99 cents isn't a lot of money, but if you're downloading one or two a day, that adds up. So yeah, I totally agree that there needs to be like a demo version you can download and try out.
And hopefully that'll be the norm from this point on.
Totally. And this whole talk of apps, we all know that the social networking scene is all the rage right now. We've got MySpace domination kind of starting to falter to over to the Facebook side of it. I've even fallen prey to this. I used to hate Facebook with a passion. Why? Because of all the friggin' apps. But then I learned to turn them all off, except for a few that I like. And now I actually like Facebook better than MySpace. But now there's a very interesting app that is making a lot of buzz across the internet right now on Facebook.
This one is actually dead-on hilarious. Fast food chain Burger King has created Whopper Sacrifice, a Facebook app that will give you a coupon for a free hamburger if you delete 10 people from your friends list. Burger King has put out some interesting campaigns as of late, but this one piques our interest because of how gleefully it pokes fun at our social networking obsession. Now is the time to put your fair-weather web friendships to the test, the Whopper Sacrifice explains. Install Whopper Sacrifice on your Facebook profile and we'll reward you with a free flame-broiled Whopper when you sacrifice 10 of your friends. The funniest part, the sacrifices show up in your activity feed. So it'll say, for example, Caroline sacrificed Josh for a free Whopper. Unfortunately, you can't delete your whole friends list and eat free for a week. The promotion is limited to one coupon per Facebook account.
So I wonder if you could just uninstall the app after you got the coupon and just add those friends back?
I actually wonder how Facebook's responding to this promotion.
Well, you think about it. I mean, someone like me, I'm not only adding friends and colleagues and former classmates, I'm adding fans of my anime voice work or whatnot. So, yeah, granted, I don't know a lot of these people that are sending friend requests. So am I 100% committed and feel bad for deleting them to get a free burger? Not necessarily.
I was going to ask you just that. I don't use Facebook, so I really can't draw the comparison, but would you sacrifice 10 friends for a Whopper?
Well, considering I did just get in the mail the free Dr. Pepper coupon from the Dr. Pepper Guns N' Roses promotion, between that and a free burger, I may just do this.
Well, as I advocated with you already, I would frame that coupon and hang it up on the wall since, you know, millions of other people, myself included, get screwed on that deal, so I'd hang on to it, and then maybe one day in the future you run into Axl Rose and you can have him autograph it for you.
Yeah, that or just fling a punch at me or take a crap on it or something. I don't know.
Well, if it's a punch, I wouldn't be too worried. He seems a little femmy.
Oh, man. But that has to be the wildest promotion I think I've ever heard.
Well, it's certainly getting attention. And I was watching G4 today. I was watching their CES coverage. And, of course, they had to spotlight that. So it's certainly getting it out there. I mean, it's brilliant as far as Burger King's advertising campaign is concerned.
Yeah, kudos to those marketing people that are really taking advantage. Because, again, Facebook has really taken off this past year. I've seen people join Facebook and just go nuts with the whole social networking things that are going on there. And I've seen MySpace kind of just fall by the wayside. A lot of people are just jumping ship and doing that. Same with Twitter. Twitter, I read, has grown over 750% in 2008. It's not anywhere near the level of numbers as Facebook, but for a microblogging site, Twitter has really come a long way, too.
It's really wild how quickly MySpace is like really petering out.
But it's still getting a lot of corporate sponsorship. You still see the major movie studios having ads plastered all across as you sign in on the page. So I don't know how much longer that'll happen before everything dries up. I guess MySpace has to be kind of freaking in their boots going like, what are we going to do to combat this? Because we were first.
That's probably the issue, because it's truly become a corporate entity, and I don't think that's what social networking is all about.
Not really. Now, I don't know who owns Facebook, but Fox owns MySpace.
Well, I mean, say no more. Fox.
Yeah, so maybe they're thinking ahead there. Well, we got to get that money from Watchmen, because MySpace is turned out to be kind of a dud. Crap. Just lots of unexpected things happening. This one's pretty unexpected, too. Nine Inch Nails has over 400 gigs of raw, unedited, high-def concert footage. And what have they done with it? They stuck it on torrents. That's right. Now, what do you think they would do with that footage originally? Well, Trent Reznor wanted to make a new concert DVD in 3D. A really cool project, right? But apparently there was a little problem. Little negotiations kind of broke down with his former record company and kind of killed that project. So, in another totally awesome move, Trent has posted on 9inchnails.com that all these hours of multiple-angle high-def concert footage now available on torrents for fans to download and assemble to their heart's content. Three different shows of the recent Lights in the Sky tour were taped using HDV camcorders, and despite this being something that most of the fans probably lacked the skill to take on, I really can't help but applaud Trent's latest FU to the music industry. So, and I found this a really extreme interest for folks who actually want a copy of the fans' handiwork. You can actually request a free copy of this concert footage at thisoneisonus.com. Just a little place to enter your name and address, or you can volunteer to help assemble footage or donate DVD cases and packaging and create your own custom artwork. It's 100% not-for-profit, fan-produced bootleg that is totally endorsed by the band.
And, you know, I'm going to have to request one because I was thinking, you know, maybe you can download this HD stuff, give it a watch and whatever. Like 400 gig. I don't have the storage capacity for that, and I certainly couldn't imagine how long that would take to download. It's absolutely brilliant. Even if it's just a marketing ploy, it's still absolutely brilliant to be able to give up that much material in HD for free. That blows my mind.
The band really stands to gain nothing from it, you know, other than ingratiating themselves with their fans. And that is just huge. I mean, Trent and his band have already given away their latest album for free. Now, yeah, eventually, like a month or two later, they did issue an actual brick-and-mortar CD version of it, but there were incentives to get the download. He even sold out of his signed version that cost over $300. He sold out within a day. They made, like, a cool million on an album that they basically gave away.
They actually did a limited vinyl pressing, too, right?
I believe so, and I think there's even a limited Blu-ray version of his instrumental album, Ghosts.
Nine Inch Nails kind of fell off the radar for a little bit. They were, like, really hot in the early 90s and kind of petered out, so I guess you kind of got to do what you have to do to survive. But Trent Reznor he's really been the voice of the indie scene. He's really, you know, told artists, you can do it on your own. You don't need the big label support to do this anymore. So certainly tip my hat to Reznor. I certainly tip my hat for making 400 gig of HD concert footage available for free. That is just incredibly badass.
Yeah, it's a project that I would never take on. I don't have, first of all, the space. Second of all, the know-how. But I tell you, I'm damn interested to see what a lot of enterprising fans, because there's a lot of really creative talent out there that aren't necessarily in the corporate world or in the entertainment biz. Just regular people on the street like you and me that happen to be just as good as a professional editor.
And that's one of the greatest aspects of having this humongous online community. The internet is just, it's a phenomenal way to get your stuff out there, get it available, and you get to meet people or make your product available to people who can do amazing things with it. So exactly what you said, this is going to fall into a few hands of some indie guys who just stay at home and tweak on their computer, and they'll probably put out a product better than a professional studio could because they have that passion driving them. And it's really the passion that's going to make this a kick-ass project.
That's right. Again, they're not profiting from this. And again, if you're interested in getting a free copy, it's a double DVD that these guys are hawking on their fan site. It's called ThisOneIsOnUs.com.
What?
In the realm of anime.
Boy, that guy sure has a lot of nerve. Actually, he reminds me of someone I know.
Yeah, isn't he horrible? I think we should tell him off. Yeah, let's do that.
It looks like one of the few anime companies still left in the United States has actually picked up a license to one of the biggest mecha titles of all time.
North American animation distributor Funimation Entertainment announced last Wednesday that it has acquired Evangelion 1.0, You Are Not Alone, the first film in an ongoing four-film remake of the Evangelion science fiction anime franchise. Now, while Evangelion 1.0 changed little in the basic premise and overall structure of the original Evangelion story, its new final scene and the included preview for the next film indicate broader changes in the remaining three films. The next film, Evangelion 2.0, You Cannot Advance, will open in Japan in early summer. Funimation will release the Evangelion 1.0 film in North America. The original Japanese theatrical trailer is currently available at Funimation's website.
That's a pretty badass thing. Another huge coin in the pocket for Funimation. It's a huge title. It's been around since the mid-90s. And a point of controversy amongst fans because the creator did not make a really clear plot point on as to what happened in the end. I mean, you had the TV series, and then you had two friggin' movies, and now you've got four movies yet again, probably recycling a lot of footage, but maybe retelling a little bit of different things here and there. But wow, talk about a Studio Gainax really milking their cash cow.
To a certain degree, I would argue that for the new generation getting turned on to Evangelion, it might be a little easier to digest four films instead of watching, you know, the very convoluted anime series and then the two feature films that followed after that, trying to explain the events of the series. So I'd like to see them. I'd like to check them out and make that comparison. Because God knows, if you watch the series and then the original two movies, it'll make your head explode. It's a lot to wrap your head around. It's a very dark, disturbing, deep, brooding series, and you'll feel relatively emotionally drained after watching it, so you kind of got to go in knowing that if you haven't seen it yet.
Now, I'm particularly lucky because I got to just voice some bit parts. I was in Dallas over Christmas break, and they were already recording on this first part, and they said, hey, we want to throw you a bone here. You want to be on Evangelion? It's like, hell yeah, I want to be on Evangelion. That's a nice resume patter. I mean, no, I'm not a big character or anything, but I'm like a military guy who's screaming orders left and right and freaking out that the angels are attacking. And hey, why not? It's fun.
Hopefully this will turn on a new generation to the Evangelion franchise. And it's kind of nice to know that it's limited to four films and it's not something that could potentially go on for the next 20 years unless they decide to reboot the whole franchise again.
I don't know. They could do it.
You mentioned that you were up at Funimation and you did some bit parts on this. Any word if the original ADV cast was brought in to reprise some of the roles or if it's all new casting?
That was an unknown, unfortunately, at the time. And even if I did know, they probably swore me to secrecy. But I can't say I don't really have any information on that. we'll have to see what happens. I don't know if they're going to try and get some of the cast, because some of the cast members actually aren't in Texas anymore. They aren't in Houston. They're not even in Dallas. They're actually out here in L.A. So I don't know if they want to try and entice the cast members back or have them record their parts here in an L.A. studio. That remains to be seen, but I'm sure Funimation will come forward as soon, because I know a lot of people want to know, is the dubcast returning? All right. Well, folks, that takes us to the end of our podcast, which means time for a top 10 list that's not really top 10 things. It's once again provided by the wonderfully hysterical Cracked.com. This one's a top 5 list. These are the top 5 reasons Megatron should have fired Starscream years ago. Number 1, the situation. Upon hearing that their enemies, the Autobots, are planning to scour the universe for an energy source, Starscream tells Megatron, "The Autobots would have lost eons ago if I'd been calling the shots." He follows that statement up with, "My time will come, Megatron." Suggested course of action. It's best to address a situation before it gets out of hand. At this point, just 5 minutes into the first episode of the show, Megatron should have already been asking himself if it was worth keeping Starscream on as a member of the team. The answer is clear. Megatron has many employees who are willing to listen to his orders without politicking for more power. He should have immediately terminated Starscream and had him escorted from the premises by Shockwave and Thundercracker. Or alternatively, he could have shot him in the back of the head with a huge arm cannon.
Number 2. The situation. After 4 million years, a volcanic eruption brings the Decepticons back to life, with the aid of fix-it robots on the Autobot ship that crashed on Earth. Once all the Decepticons are fully functional, Starscream begins firing his arm laser aimlessly at the valley below. Suggested course of action. One should never confront an erratic, potentially violent employee alone. Megatron needs to attempt to develop a workplace environment that fosters trust among existing employees and management, and to do so, he cannot tolerate loose cannons such as Starscream. For sensitivity purposes, Megatron should have taken Starscream off the premises and fired him privately in order to preserve the Decepticons' dignity. Megatron may have considered waiting until Starscream turned around so that he could shoot him in the back of the head with his enormous arm cannon.
Number 3. 15 seconds later, in the same episode. The situation. After disobeying Megatron's orders to stop shooting aimlessly in the valley below, Starscream unwittingly hits the mountainside, which holds the Autobots' crashed ship. The falling rocks engage the little fix-it robots inside, and before long, all the Autobots are repaired and again determined to protect the universe against the Decepticons. Suggested course of action. We would have loved to move on to another episode, but Starscream once again delivers a shining example of behavior that warrants dismissal. His insolence has directly resulted in bringing back the Autobots, creating hostile competition for Energon in the marketplace, and reanimating a stalwart force hell-bent on undoing everything that the Decepticons attempt. Megatron, if he were to have physical evidence of Starscream's monumental mistake, would not only be within his rights to immediately terminate the Decepticon services, but he would also have been within his right to rip Starscream apart, piece by annoying piece, with his ginormous hands.
Number 4. The situation. While out with Soundwave and Rumble to rustle up some materials for their new Earth base, Starscream informs Rumble that someday he will be giving the orders. Rumble laughs, saying that Megatron is too strong and that Starscream will never be their leader. Starscream responds by speculating that he will, quote, find a way. Everyone has a weakness. Suggested course of action. He's suggesting a mutiny, a hostile takeover. Ideally, Rumble would document Starscream's words and report back to Megatron. It should be noted that since he's a cassette tape, he easily could have recorded the threats and played them back to Megatron through Soundwave's chest cavity. But you can't count on your employees to report such misdeeds when you've allowed them to happen right in front of you. Megatron may want to consider waking up and recognizing that Starscream is a cancer who tries to poison relationships. Seriously, I'd just blast him in the back of the head, or his face, whatever. Just get rid of him.
And number 5. 19 minutes and 45 seconds into, you guessed it, the same episode. The situation. Megatron transforms for the first time into his gun form and allows Starscream to shoot him at the incoming Autobots. Of course, he misses with all 3 effing shots. suggested course of action. Okay, this is the last straw. Megatron, seriously! We're starting to think that the problem is you. Why the hell would you jump into Starscream's hands? The one guy on your team who consistently undermines your authority and attempts to overthrow your leadership, and then he blows it by not connecting with a single effing Autobot? We're not so sure he was actually shooting as much as trying to choke you to death. The mere fact that he's still around is ridiculous, but then you go and trust him when the Autobots are bearing down on you and your precious Energon cubes? Dumb. You keep Starscream around and you'll be replaying this same scenario for years to come in 30-minute intervals, no doubt.
Oh. Brilliance. As our listeners know, we certainly adore Cracked for their phenomenal list, and this is definitely a prize list from them.
Just want to shoot him in the back of the head with your ginormous arm cannon.
Oh. Effing Starscream.
Yeah, effing Starscream, I swear. All right. Well, we're fresh out of content. Anything else to add there, Steve?
I don't even have a burp for this episode.
All righty then. Well, that's all we have till next time. So, yeah, keep the feedback flowing. Pay attention to the credits coming up. Maria will tell you how to get in touch with the show. We encourage you to do so. Until next time, this is Kyle Hebert.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya!
Visit our official blog page at bigbaldbroadcast.blogspot.com. Donations are graciously accepted and appreciated. Please email us at thebigbaldbroadcast@gmail.com. Additional announcements by Maria Vu. Remember to stay geeky.
That was totally wicked!